Hi. So this is the next installment in the Shalom Bayis, the Home is Where the Shekhinah Is series. And one thing for sure, I have a sense that just putting this out there for the community, the whole series has created as a level of awareness and a level of concern for this particular topic, which is a very healthy one, similar to the much larger and more significant impact that the Chafetz Chaim Heritage Foundation has accomplished by creating out of the issue of Lashon Hara a whole world of literature and thought and so on and so forth, and it helps create a certain level of consciousness. And so I'm really happy about that, and I'm particularly happy about all the communication and correspondence that I've received from people over the weeks and months about this topic and others that we've discussed. So let's just realize the larger picture out of which this whole thing comes, meaning that often when we talk about Shalom Bayis, we talk about fixing a problem, which is there's tension, there are challenges, we don't get along. In the back of our minds, some people would say, I'm worried about divorce, or I can't stand being with my spouse and I just have to die this way, there's nothing else to do. Or it's something else, it's a much more tolerable situation, it's not horrible, it's just not what I always thought it would be, or I hate it when, and that kind of a thing. And then there's just the negativity, and then you say Shalom Bayis and say, oh, okay, I want to make sure that I don't have those problems, I want to make sure to fix that. That's not where we're coming from. We're not coming from that at all. If it makes a difference to people who are dealing with that kind of thing, that's fine. But that's not where we're coming from. Where we're coming from is that the home is where the Shekhinah is, right? That we're actually trying to build relationships that reflect the presence of the Almighty. Not that we put on a talus before we say good morning to our spouses because it's a religious thing, but just the opposite. Because in the natural interaction between husband and wife, we're trying to create a context in which the Shekhinah can be found. The Shekhinah is naturally there. That's the design of the human race, is for us to relate to each other in such a way that there's plenty of room for the Shekhinah to take over and fill in the gaps and be felt, so that we can get on with the business of creatively living our lives. And what we can't do when there is an absence of this, when there is tension, or when there is, negative tension, what we can't do is focus on why we were created in the first place. What happens is we end up becoming preoccupied with surviving the negativity of our spouse, and that becomes the goal of the day. Or not the negativity of the spouse, but the negativity of life itself. And that becomes the goal of the day. So and that therefore takes a person out of, I use this term very lightly, don't mean that it's a game, out of the game of life. Life is not a game, life is dead serious, we do not get out of here alive, and even when we get out of here dead, we're very concerned about where we're going, life is not a joke. But what I mean the game of life is that we're not playing the game that we're designed to play when we're spending our time just getting through relationships that are driving us crazy. So what we're trying to do is just create the proper context for the right things to happen and for people to thrive. So that's the background, so to speak. We're coming from a position that there's something marvelous that could happen in a Jewish home, and we want to make sure that we create the proper environment for that to be able to occur. And I would even wager that those who wonder about, they look at certain people and they say, wow, how did they do that? How did they create that? How did they have that atmosphere? When they look at it, it looks like the impossible. It looks as if it is just like some magic formula that you have to have some special training or you have to be born into something. It's not true. But most of the time, the good stuff really takes care of itself, as long as we don't interfere with it by creating all kinds of negativity and maintaining the negativity. So that's the context in which we want to address tonight's issues. And tonight's issues have to do really with arguments. They have to do with the fact that argument is a part of daily spousal living. It seems to be to most people. There are disagreements, there are different approaches, there are frustrations, and there are criticisms. And that causes a lot of problems. It causes a lot of tension. and it causes a lot of tuning out and all that kind of thing. So what I really want to do, I would say goal number one tonight, if you leave here tonight with just this awareness, I'll be happy. So if you can memorize this sentence now, you can leave now, and at least I'll be happy, okay? So the goal I have is to distinguish between a process of intimacy on the one hand, which would mean dealing with disagreements and different perspectives and seeing that as a process of developing intimacy, actually coming at all kinds of situations from different perspectives, not agreeing, and having that be a process of intimacy on the one hand, and on the other hand, argument and estrangement, which means that in both cases we're dealing with differing perspectives, differing interests, different wills, but in one case we're talking about viewing this as a beginning of a process in which intimacy can be developed. In the other case, we're talking about a process in which estrangement develops and distance develops. So the big chiddush, so to speak, the big news in what I just said is that we want disagreements in marriage. We want different perspectives in marriage. It's the design of the thing. As a matter of fact, the pasuk says so. Lo tov heyosa adam levado. It is not good for a man to be alone. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I create man, I don't want him agreeing with himself. I don't want man walking around having his own opinion with nothing to contend with, because that's not a good thing. When he is alone, he's inevitably, no matter how great he is, how smart he is, how righteous he is, how holy he is, how insightful he is, and how well put together and how much therapy he's had, if he is not going to contend with something else, he ain't going to do well. So therefore, Eselo Ezer, I will make for him an Ezer. Baruch Ato Adonai Eloheinu Melech Olam Shehakol Nehiyah Livaro. I will make for him an Ezer, and really, God could have stopped right there, the way we think of marriage. I'll make for him a partner, a helpmate. But it doesn't stop there. In order to fix man being alone, it's not enough to make him an Ezer, make him a partner, because he still would not, he would still be alone after he makes a partner, if the partner is just somebody who, okay, sir, whatever you want, that's what I want. Whatever you want, I will help you make it. The man is still alone. The creature is still alone if he has a yes woman as his partner. So therefore, Eselo Ezer says the next word in the pasuk, kenegdo. Opposite him is the translation. I think that's because the King James and his experts were afraid of the truth. It's really opposing him. I will make him an Ezer kenegdo. Not just facing him, but literally in opposition. Opposing him. Which means I'm going to make a creature who's going to think differently than him. That's the design of the relationship. Now go to it and have a wonderful life. Now you're ready. Now it's tov. Now it's good. So therefore, we want it. We want disagreement. We actually want different perspectives. We welcome it. A mature creature doesn't expect to be agreed with. He actually, or she actually, seeks a different perspective and then seeks to have that different perspective be the catalyst for growth, and I would say not only growth, but for intimacy, meaning the relationship itself will become intimate as a result of dealing with the fact that there are disagreements. So, and that there's another opinion besides one's own. So, again, the goal is to distinguish between a process of intimacy, which is dealing with disagreements in a constructive way, in a productive way, or what I would call productive disagreements, on the one hand, and argument and estrangement, or a process of estrangement on the other hand, in which the differing perspectives become the source of just distance and worse and destruction. So that's really what we want to be able to do here. And now, we all know, everybody here knows that couples that argue with each other are not doing too well, right? Everybody knows that. We all know it's bad to argue. And we all know that it doesn't do any good, right? And but what we don't know is what we're doing. We're not aware of ourselves. The Baalei Mussar specialized in one thing. Baalei Mussar did not specialize in screaming at themselves about how bad they are and saying the bad thing is really bad and I don't want to be bad, so therefore I'm going to stop doing bad things. What the Baalei Mussar really specialized in is just noticing themselves. They just specialized in knowing what they're doing and just taking stock, cheshbon hanefesh, really just doing an inventory of themselves. And you just look at yourself in the mirror authentically, and you really see what you're talking about, and you go, oh, okay, now I can deal with it. I can't make any choices about myself when I don't even know what I'm doing. So what happens is, in the daily grind of life, we lose sight of what we're doing. And after a while, we don't even think about things. Yesterday I made a presentation somewhere, and somebody afterwards, a really good guy, I thank him for it, came over to me and he said, three times you said so on and so forth. That is a meaningless sentence, so on and so forth, and it's distracting. And he's 100% right. I had not heard myself say that once, because the only time I was saying that was when I was tuning out and not thinking about the people I was talking to. So I would sit there and say what I said and then go, and so on and so forth, because I didn't know what I was going to say next. So the point is, I was saying, so he pointed out that I said so on and so forth, and it doesn't add anything to my discourse. And I had no idea. It's just an amazing thing. I do it, I say it, and I have no idea that I'm doing it. Literally, I believed him. I kind of remember that I did it. The point is that we have no idea what we're doing. Even though we don't want to do it, we do it. So that's really what tonight's focus is going to be. I'm going to walk you through a cheshbon nefesh, a personal inventory of things. And some of this might seem very frustrating. And more than frustrating, I promise you, you will hate it. If you hate it, we've accomplished our goal, because you will actually look at yourself in the mirror and you will not like what you see. Nobody ever does. That's why we don't look in the mirror too much. If you're a woman, I think you understand that really well. because women kind of like steal a look in the mirror, but they don't really look fully, because they're afraid to find what they're going to find. So they just look because they have to, but they, you know, today. So the point is that... and that's chauvinistic, and it's on tape, and I don't care. So, so that's what we're going to do tonight. Okay, Chazal are filled. The sages are filled with admonitions, particularly to husbands, but I think it is not limited to husbands in many, many cases. That what you want to do is actually hear the opinion of the other, and what we want to do tonight is just learn to distinguish between the destructive way of being involved in disagreement and a more constructive way, and actually look at different perspectives as opportunities. Wouldn't that be great if you could actually welcome your spouse's different personality and different way of doing things and different perspective, and actually appreciate him or her because she disagrees? Wouldn't that be great? It really is possible. Not like I'm such a great guy because I can tolerate my spouse having a different perspective, but I'm a great guy because I actually enjoy hearing the other perspective, and I gain from it and I grow from it. That would be great. So I think that can happen, and we're going to do all of this in less than an hour, and we're going to do it with a worksheet that I created, and I hope it works for you. I'm going to tell you not to think about pink elephants, okay? When I give you this worksheet, don't think about pink elephants. That's one thing. Number two is, don't read it, because it will make no sense to you, it will distract you from what we're doing. When we get to each line, we'll get there. But if you read it now, you're going to think you know everything, and you don't. Okay. It's one page. It's front and back. No, each person gets their own. Matter of fact, for the purposes of this exercise of the last question of the evening, I would even say that Fauci's might want to catch the business on the day, but you have to be really, really straight with themselves. It's coming. It's coming. No, funny here. Who else doesn't have one? Okay. Women can sit with women, men can sit with men, but I don't think husbands and wives should sit together for this particular thing, believe it or not. It's not terrible if you do. Just, what's that? Okay, we got plenty more.
What else?
Okay, wow. We know that Gail's going to be going to the office in a minute to Xerox your copy. I think I don't even have my own anymore. Okay. All right, good. Okay. Thank you so much. By the way, Gail was not the one who Xeroxed only 25 copies. It was me. So if it was Gail, there'd be plenty here.
There'd be 200.
Yeah, I know. And there'd also be 250 people, because that's what she expects. I expected 4. Anyway, all right. First thing I want you to do, on your worksheet. Does everybody have a pen? No. Who needs a pen? Okay. I have some.
She might get some.
She did? Okay, good. So we might wait an extra second. Let's see what else I got here. No cap on it.
I can share one with my wife as long as it doesn't lead to a destructive arm.
You got it exactly. You don't realize that you already insulted her because she wants everybody to think you never have one. So you just implied that you're used to having one, too. You're already insulted. You'll deal with that on the way home. Alright, so the first thing I want you to do is just think about it. On a scale of 1 to 10, I'm sorry Gail's missing this, on a scale of 1 to 10, and 1 being the least possible, and 10 being the most possible. Like, there's nothing that happens that you don't argue about. Nothing in the world. Good morning. No, it's not. Okay, that would be 10. Okay. So on a scale of 1 to 10, just rate yourself now how much you think you argue. Like, the most or the least. Or anywhere in between. And don't let anybody see what you write. Make sure. They're coming. Yeah, Super Gail is coming in a minute. Super Gail, yeah.
What was the
No, just go with if the thing we're focusing on at the moment and try to avoid going ahead, because you'll get more out of it by not going ahead. So I'm going a little slower here because I want to give a chance for the people who don't have writing implements or who don't have a copy. All right. Now, think back to the last argument that you've had with your spouse. It doesn't have to be a major knockdown, blowout thing. It could be something like your husband said, do we have any potato chips? And you said, no, I told you, we're not doing salt anymore. And the husband says, we're not even doing potato chips? And he's a little disgusted. And you say, when I say we're not doing salt, I mean we're not doing salt. Do you know potato chips without salt? And he says, yes. Don't you know there are potato chips without salt? That's an argument, okay? So I'm saying, that's not bad. It's not awful. But I'm just saying. So think back to the last argument you've had. When was it? What does the worksheet say for this next question? I don't have it in front of me. What was it about? Right. What was it about? Thank you very much. So think back to the last argument you had, and what was it about? Yes?
Sure. You're saying that not like a fight, it was just the interaction was...
A negative interaction. Yeah, good. Thanks for that clarification. Yeah, thanks, Gail, so much. Who needed a writing implement? Stan, I'll get it coming. Okay.
Sorry about that.
Everybody's done the work. Well, make that okay. All right, so, Gail, you just missed you missed rating how often you argue. And now we're doing the last argument you think of. All right. And what it was about. Yes.
Would you consider like one way someone being like saying a negative comment, the other person not commenting? Is that
well, you would be the one if you're the one who did the arguing or the negative commenting, and the other one didn't, then that would count for you. Wouldn't count for them. Yeah. You don't have to be. I don't care if you're terribly right, or I don't care if you're like totally accurate.
That's considered like any negative interaction.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, a negative interaction. A negative contribution, a negative verbal contribution. Okay, yeah. And if you don't get it exactly right, it's okay. try to phrase what you thought or what it was about or what the other one wanted. Okay. Now, sometimes there are people who don't argue. Right, there are actually couples where they don't argue, but they don't argue. It's not that they don't argue because they just see eye to eye on everything. just one of them has decided that he's not or she's not going to say anything ever again. Okay? It's just, I've had it. Okay? So in that case, I want you to write down, if you're one of those people, I want you to write down what you would change in your spouse if you could complain about it and get a result. Okay? And when was the last time that came up for you as an issue? When you didn't argue because you just discussed it anyway. I'm not looking for trouble. I'm just trying to just call the cheshbon and nefesh. You can do it, yeah. Yeah, these are not to be maintained. These are not supposed to see the light of tomorrow morning. So you see that on the worksheet. The thing I've stopped arguing about but wish I could bring up is, right? In other words, you already know nothing good is going to come of this, so I'm not even going to say anything about this anymore. What's that? Yeah, we're going to get to that in a second. I'm sorry, it's a little out of order here. Yeah, so we're on the thing I've stopped arguing about but wish I could bring up is. Okay. Okay, who feels like I'm going too fast? Who feels like they're up to speed and they're ready for the next thing? Who has a feeling or no feeling at all about anything? Okay, like, everybody, are we okay? Are we on the right pace here? Okay. So, now think to the, if you had to think of a theme, if you had to think of a theme, there may not be a theme, but for the purpose of this question, I want you to think of a theme as best you can. What is the theme of your arguments? Like, it could be, you don't care, or you're a slob, or I'm not a slob, or there could be a theme, or you're always correcting me, or you're always wrong, or some theme, you don't care about the children, you're never on time. Some theme of your argument that you have, it's not always what you hold about the other person. Sometimes the argument itself is about, it's about the children, or it's about personal intimacy, or it's about money, or it's about priorities, right? Something at all that would capture the flavor of the arguments. Like if you knew you were going to have an argument tomorrow, your guess would be that it's about this kind of thing or along these certain lines. Anything at all that would capture, you know, like a unifying theme. And again, don't worry about getting too precise and clinical about it. As long as you just have an idea of something that's meaningful to you in answering this question. The thing we argue about all the time is, should have said most of the time, okay, I may be confusing you, I see in the worksheet here. The thing we argue about all the time is this, and then I have the theme of our arguments is usually. Okay, so one, I wanted really the topic, you know, like the children or something like that. And then within that, the theme of our arguments is like, you don't do what you're supposed to, or you're too strict. In that case, let's say if it was about money, you broke our agreement to how much you're going to spend, you know, that kind of thing. So within the thing that you normally argue about, I'm then asking for the theme, okay? Yeah, I've lost you? Okay. So in other words, I have two questions that are mostly the same, and I'm trying to show you how they're different. First, I have the thing we argue about all the time is. By that I meant the topic. Then, two sentences later, I have the theme of our arguments. So within that topic, there's a theme. Like, you don't care, or you're always late, or you break your agreements, or something like that. Or you didn't listen to me. About the children, whatever it is. So there's a theme within the argument or the topic that you usually argue about. That's what I'm looking for. Okay. If you don't like this, then I'm succeeding. And I'm not trying to make you miserable, but we're not looking at this stuff in order to walk away feeling great about ourselves. We're doing this to get straight with ourselves a little bit. Okay, so now, I have here to be explained. Having gone through these few little questions that we've asked ourselves, and we're recalling the arguments that we've had, and we're thinking about the theme, and we're thinking about the things that we haven't argued about that we wish we could argue about but we stopped bringing up. Having gone through all that, I want you now to rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you argue with your spouse? Given, you know, whatever you rated before, that's fine. You might still hold the same thing, but you might not. So rate yourself again, and just in terms of on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the least, 10 being the most, how much do you think you argue with your spouse? Same question again. Just you've just had more time to think about it and be aware of different things. And it could be the same, could be not the same. Whatever your answer is, it's not good or bad. It says to be explained. I didn't want you to see that before because then you would think that I was really disorganized. It's the same exact thing as a scale on 1 to 10, okay? Okay, now, here what we're going to do is we're going to try to get into your own mind at the moment that you're in the middle of an argument, okay? Right now you're thinking clearly because you're here. So these thoughts that you have right now aren't of value because you're not in the middle of an argument. Maybe you are, but probably not. So what I want you to do is explain to yourself, and I'm not asking you to be reasonable, I'm not asking you to be a clinician or a therapist or a Baal Musar. Just explain to yourself the reasons that you have to argue. You know, why you justify arguing when you're arguing? When you're in the middle of an argument, what are you arguing for? Why are you arguing? Because it's just impossible to get through the day without it, because I'm trying to change my spouse's behavior, I'm trying to remind my spouse about things that he or she always forgets, because I want to prove them wrong, or because I want to get even. I'm just making up stuff. Why, when you're arguing, I'm not asking for a good reason, but when you're arguing, why do you find the need to say what you're saying in the middle of that negative interaction? If you're defending yourself because your spouse is always telling you how bad you are, something like that. You could have 2 or 3 or 4 or 5. So reasons you have to argue. And I'll give you another minute here. It would have been easier for you if it was on a card so you had something hard to write at it. Okay, now we're going to the second side of the sheet. The side that said that starts with continued on the top. And here I want you to what's that? I'm sorry, I thought I heard something. So I want you here to see what you achieve. What have you achieved from arguing? What has changed? How is the world different from the arguments that you have, from the points you've made? What was the last argument you won? When was the last time somebody stopped doing something that you didn't want them to do as a result of the argument? When was the last time somebody started doing something that you wanted them to do as a result of the argument? It may be that somebody actually, you know, started, I don't know, cleaning up after themselves after you had a big fight about it. And they just started cleaning up, maybe. So that would be a result.
Is it focused on positive outcomes or
achieved? Oh, I don't mean sarcastically. Good point. I mean, like, what results did you get that really are, like, okay, I got a result, I got something out of this.
Okay.
Yeah. And you can, you know, you can really squeeze out whatever you think is positive. Like, at least my spouse knows how I feel about this, finally. That's a result. What's that? I want things that were achieved, yeah. Like, things that happened that, yeah. Things that were achieved, yeah. I guess positive, yeah. This would be like your business has just gone bankrupt and you're doing an accounting and you know before you start that you're going to be in the red, but meanwhile you're counting your assets, right? So there could be some assets, even in a bankrupt, Tuesday, January 2nd, I made a lot of money. Then after that, every single day I lost money. So whatever came, that's a result of arguing that you've achieved. I'm calling achievement a positive thing, yeah. Of course, the one that we're all very, very familiar with is the next one. Let's go on to that. The price I pay for arguing. The cost. What does it cost me? So, like, what do you lose when you argue? What does your spouse lose? What do your children lose? You could even put down, what does Hashem lose? You know, anything. Examples, I'm just, again, picking up on things that might work for you. I lose my peace and quiet. I lose love for my children or love for my spouse, or I lose my temper, or I lose being able to spend time with my spouse, anything like that. I lose our perspective. That's what you lose. Good. Okay. Good. My kids, here, my kids lose because their parents are arguing. And it's not fun to be in the house. Whatever, something like that. I'm just giving examples. I'm not saying that that's the thing. That's the price. Yes? Yeah. Yeah, so that's why I'm only looking for things that you really have achieved. Things that you really think benefited you or the world because you argued. And if there's nothing, then leave it blank. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I just want to make an observation. Whenever a person does a cheshbon nefesh, when a person really looks at him or herself, there's a process. What happens is we start squirming out of it. We start coming up with, what exactly do I mean when I say this? And maybe we find it very difficult just to say what it is. Right? When it comes to doing a cheshbon nefesh, it's a very difficult thing. It's a normal thing. So it's not really an easy thing to do. It's really not an easy thing to do. Okay, so now let's just review a couple things here. This is a little difficult. I don't want people to feel that they need to share their own personal stuff. But in general, can anybody think of, either by looking at your own thing, can anybody think of good reasons to argue? When a person is arguing, like good reasons to argue. Yeah, you just went through this. What would be like a good reason to argue? Or if you feel like sharing your own reason for arguing, do that. As long as you don't embarrass your spouse. Can anybody think of one? Yes, ma'am.
If you keep on holding everything in and you don't let it out, then you're going to build it and then you're going to explode even larger.
Maybe. Good. Okay. So it's like relief of tension and pressure. Right. Okay. Okay. Did I summarize that right?
Sure.
Okay. Pressure. You said something. You used a different word though. You said.
So you don't build up and then explode.
Oh yeah. Avoid exploding. Anything else? Yes.
An argument can be kept from escalating or getting personal or emotional.
Yeah.
The rules of civil argument can be followed, it can actually lead to better mutual understanding.
Sure.
The relation of the other person's point or pain or perception or whatever.
Right, very good. Rubin, I think you, I said that in the first 2 minutes, and I think you missed that. So we're actually, one of the goals here is to distinguish, and that's why we're using the word argument in terms of everything that's not that, right? And then there's disagreements, which we're calling a process leading to intimacy, constructive disagreements. Okay.
But it's important what you said is that even an argument is a good thing, a really bad negative sort of energy argument, can still have this as a major benefit, right? So I think
it's
not the most productive way to get your pain across, but
I disagree. I think that once it gets emotional, we can't hear each other. The point can't be made. We shut ourselves off from.
Well, okay. Well, let's for argument's sake say that when a person is arguing, he thinks or she thinks what Alex just said, that this would be a good way for the other person to get my perspective, right? That would be a reason. I didn't say it's a good reason to argue. That's a reason that somebody would be arguing.
Yeah.
They think
right.
That so communicates my perspective, right? Like you say, why are you arguing? You say, because I want him or her to know what I think. Right? So that's why, we're trying to get into the mind of a person who argues. Not whether it's justified according to God. Right? But that would be one of the reasons we argue. I want the other person, I want her to know what I think, for heaven's sakes. Right? I'm just telling her how I feel. Right? That's what we say, right? So that's a reason to argue. I'm just telling her how I feel. Right? Okay. Anything else? Yes. So you can get your way. Right, okay. To wind? Yeah, to wind.
To get your way.
Right. Right, that would be the reason. Good reason. Again, not good morally, but a mentally good reason. In the moment that you're arguing, that would be a good reason. Yes?
So preempt the temporary lapse of judgment.
Aha. Uh-huh. In other words,
the other part is incapacitated somehow, tired, on meds, etc., and would make decisions they wouldn't normally make.
Okay, good. Okay, preempt bad judgment, right?
Temporary bad judgment.
Yeah. Okay. How do you spell preempt? Pre. Huh?
Two
weeks. Really?
Put a dash.
Okay, can you do that? Is that legal?
D.
Oh, yeah, that would help. Okay. Preempt. Temporary bad judgment. Okay, good. All right. Okay. And that's why a person might think that he or she is arguing. Okay, anything else that might be in the head?
Blocking a very difficult person, it might be
A what?
It might prevent violence if you just argue.
Uh-huh. So a person would argue to prevent violence from happening.
If you verbally clash, it might prevent
someone
from loving you.
So it's kind of like what was said before, relief of tension,
yeah.
Pressure, avoid exploding, that kind of thing. Okay, good, okay. Exploding, we'll just put over here, violence. It avoids that too. Okay. Okay, good. All right. Anything else that again, this would be the answer that the person would give. Why are you arguing? And the person would say, yeah.
It's better to have a contact with them versus no contact with them.
Uh huh. Okay.
Better to have a communication with them than no communication.
Right, so anything's better than nothing?
Yeah. I'd rather negative attention than no attention.
Then no contact, or yeah, okay. All right, good. All right, so these are, anything else? Anybody else have anything else that's like, it seems like a typical, what's that?
I think we're missing the main one.
Yeah?
Behavior modification, right? Like, I think that's why most people think, right, why they argue, they hope.
To get the other person to change their behavior.
Right.
Right. The reason, right. All right, and it might even be something like, I've tried everything, and I can't get him to X. Right? Okay, but it's okay. So it's to change behavior. Change behavior. All right. Inside of that, we could even say, for your own good. I'm only trying to help you. That's why I'm being such a. Okay. I'm trying to help. Why are making you miserable? Okay. This is what we're thinking. This is a good. This is when you're arguing. Why you're arguing? Good reason to argue. Yeah. I'm not saying, again, I'm not saying this is why God would tell you to go ahead and argue. This is why you think that you should be arguing at the moment that you're doing it. Yeah. Okay. Now, let's talk about this,
about what it costs. Right? Let's talk about what happens as a result. What are some of the costs?
What's the price? Okay.
And let's actually say health. Let's say health. If a person is in constant state of argument, tension, anger, resentment, disagreement, it has health ramifications. Okay, we'll just put blood pressure there as one symptom. Okay, anything else?
Any other costs?
Teaching the children.
Okay, okay. So poor modeling, or is what's wrong with teaching the children? Okay. Negative teaching. Okay. Anything else? Yes.
Losing time.
Uh-huh. Okay. Losing time. Yeah. Okay. I hear that. You're wasting. What's that?
A rift.
Yeah. Okay. So the cost is that you're there's a rift. Distance.
What can't be there? Yeah. I'm good. I'll let you say everything. You're not answering me. Say what you were going to say.
Yeah. Insecurity in the house.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, insecure. That's in the house. In other words, it's not only do the children get negative modeling, negative teaching, but there's a whole...
Yeah, if you think about it, you know, I thought of a metaphor for this. Can you imagine that you have a relationship with Hashem, right? You really have a relationship with Hashem. Can you imagine if you heard God arguing passionately with himself, what it would be like, right? If God was having a real argument with himself, right? And, you know, and you heard him say all kinds of, you know, I don't know, whatever it is. The point is, when children hear their parents arguing, God is arguing. It's not just two people in the house. God is arguing, right? Because that's their source. The parents are their source. And their world, their source, is falling apart. You know, it would be like, you know, there are marauders going through the streets, and you know that the police department has fallen apart. They don't answer the phone. There is no police department, and now what? That's what it's like when parents are arguing. That's what it is for kids, even older kids. By the way, the insecurity. Yeah. Okay. What else? That's a cost. What else? What? How about the cost to the person himself or herself?
Doing the argument. What does the person lose?
Temper.
They lose their temper.
Self-respect.
Energy.
Yeah, energy. It's very tiring. Very tiring. I know, I'm an expert. Anyway.
You're looking at somebody. Losing the relationship with whoever is around them, the children, the spouse, you know, the shelter, you know, you're losing that. Because,
you're losing
what? Losing your family.
Right. Actually, yeah, I would say you're losing your family. It's really true. I mean, they're still physically there, but the entity called family, the wholesomeness, what's the word I'm looking for? The shalom bayit. The completeness of the family is lost. Yeah, the safety and everything else. Yes.
I have this big relationship, but it made me the will to try.
Very good. Okay, so the question
now.
Yeah, like should we say like hopelessness or
resignation?
Resignation. Yeah. All right. So we're starting to get. That's very good. We're starting to get an idea. So look at this. This is the best we could come up with over here. And this is the mind of the person who's doing the argument, right? We're trying to put ourselves, because we've been there. So
Well, it relieves the tension and pressure. I want to avoid exploding or killing somebody, so that's what I'm doing. Okay. I want people to know what I think. I want my friends to know what I think. So I got to do this. I want to win. I want my way to go. I want my way to persevere. I want to make sure that he/she doesn't do a stupid thing while they're weak or tired or sick. Well, anything is better. It's better. I, at least I'm interacting with the other person. I mean, at least I'm not, you know, totally separate. I want to make sure the other person does what I think they should do or what I know they should do. And I'm just trying to help. Okay. This is the benefit, okay, of the cost. Okay, so let's just go through the benefits of it. You know, person's well-being, person's physical health, blood pressure, the modeling for children, time, resources, the wasted time where nothing productive comes out of it, the distance between husband and wife as a result of argument, the sense of insecurity in the household itself. By the way, this is not only for the children, but when you're living with somebody, and sometimes both of you could be living with somebody, when you're living with somebody who whenever they show emotion, it is negative, there's no security. You don't ever dare come out of your shell to say anything because you're just going to get shot down. And so I'm amazed at how often I speak to couples where both parties are sure that if they said anything, they'd get shot down. So they don't say anything. They only say, I'm taking the car. Make sure to lock the house. And that replaces conversation because there's nothing wrong with saying that. Nobody's going to get them for that. So they go through the daily chores, so to speak, neutral statements. But insecurity is a big one, just not only for the kids. The self-respect. What do you do when you lose your self-respect? What does a person do to cover up a loss of self-respect? What typically will a person do? What's that?
Shoot down
the other person even more because you feel awful about yourself, and the only way you can feel better is the other person is worse, right? And how often does a spouse hear you blah 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 blah, and they go, "Well, you're worse. How about the time that you went?" As if that's a response. Well, it is. If I'm feeling awful about myself, the only thing I could do is respond, "You're worse." The energy that it takes. All right, so we get it. Right, we get it. We knew it before we started, but here I'm just trying to look at a real inventory and just get a sense of the price we pay. So obviously,
it doesn't really get us too far. Even in the moment of the argument, we can't come up with better stuff than that. So certainly, we don't have partnership that's being created. We don't have intimacy being created. We don't have anything like that happening. What we have instead is distance and tremendous cost. All right, that's fairly clear, but it's worth staring at a little bit. So now there's another way to disagree. And again, as we said at the beginning, there are going to be disagreements. There must be disagreements. The design is to have disagreements, and there's nothing wrong with disagreeing. But let's start this way. And looking at the worksheet on the second side, take a minute to fill in your response to the things you want most from your spouse. The things I want the most from my spouse. What do you want the most from your spouse? I just started you off with acceptance, understanding, love, empathy. You can copy those. You can copy one of those. You can make up other things. You can say it your own words. There is no right answer. It's just what you want. Okay, we could spend more time on this and we can get some good things out of this. If you think about it more and more, I want that too. So you might want to spend more time on this later, but at least you have a beginning now, I'm sure. Is anybody who doesn't have anything that they want from their spouse? Okay. Good. It's good news. Now, whatever it is that you want, let's say it's praise. Okay? Let's say you want praise from your spouse. Okay. Now, it's a fair assumption that your spouse wants that from you. Does anybody disagree? It's a safe assumption that your spouse wants that from you as well, right? They may not have it in the same order. They may not copy the same priorities. But probably what you want and what you would cherish the most from your spouse, probably something in that area is what they would want from you. So the next thing I'm asking you to fill out is the best way I can give that, underline the word that, which means refers to what was in the line before it, the best way I can give that to my spouse is, how can you give that to your spouse? How can you give, let's say it was praise, let's say it was encouragement, let's say it was understanding. Whatever, the best way you could give that to your spouse is what? Right.
Then I'm assuming that's also what my spouse wants from me.
For the purposes of this exercise, yeah. Like, how would I give encouragement to my spouse?
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. For the purpose of this, only because you might have said before that generally we don't know what our spouse wants.
Right.
Right. So,
For the exercise, because it's much easier to imagine to put yourself in your spouse's position by wanting something that you generally want, that you yourself want. So that's why I'm having you do it this way. It is true that your spouse probably wants something a little bit different or in a different order. Now, it could be you don't know. It's also okay. You can say, I don't know. Or I think. You're talking to yourself. You're not giving this in to the teacher. So you can be as fuzzy as you want or as clear as you think you are. Best way I can give that to my spouse. Yes? I'm not hearing what you're saying. I do believe that if the thing that you want, you give to your spouse, not exclusively, but if you're able to say, gee, I really would like to be liked. I'd like to be loved. I'd like to be encouraged. I'd like to be praised. I'd like to be appreciated, right? So that's a good place to start and try to provide that for your spouse. Not to the exclusion of other things that your spouse might want uniquely, you know. So, the best way to give that to my spouse. Now, you might find, and this is part of it, you might find that you're not sure how to do it. Now, you might find that you want to give it, but you're not sure how to do it. Okay, so, notice that about yourself. So, the next question, or the next thing on this worksheet, is... to write down your spouse's view in the argument that we talked about before, in the theme or the topic that you're always arguing about. Right, what is your spouse's view? Now the reason, we'll do this, then I'll tell you why I think it's valuable. What is your spouse's point of view? You can probably guess, but what's your spouse's point of view in the consistent argument that you referred to before? The thing you always argue about, or the theme of your arguments is, you know, we're going to run a little bit over time here. I wanted to finish at 9, we're going to run a little bit later. I'm guessing 9:07. Okay, now, I'm pushing a little harder here because I want to try to finish close to that. So, the reason this is so important, my spouse's point of view in our consistent argument is not that your spouse might be right, and it's not that your spouse, you need to agree with your spouse. If you can state what your spouse's point of view is, you're halfway to giving your spouse what he or she wants, believe it or not. Because your spouse does not want to be right in an argument. Your spouse just wants to be heard. That's all your spouse wants. Your spouse, as a matter of fact, I will tell you now that your spouse will almost do anything you want once your spouse knows that you are really, really heard. And most of the time, our arguments are, I'm sure you didn't hear me, and I have to say it clearer, more forcibly, more powerfully, more rhetorically effective. I've got to make this point one more time because you still don't get it. And I have to make it louder, and so on and so forth. So if you know what you want from your spouse, you can actually give it the same thing to your spouse. And the way you can do that is actually to, as they say, I don't know who says it, but it's a well-known device, recreate your spouse, which means that in the middle of an argument, what you can say is, so what you're saying is, right, which is the last thing you ever think of saying in the middle of an argument, because in the middle of an argument, you're waiting for them to finish what they're saying, or you're waiting till they breathe, till they inhale, so you can interrupt and say what you're saying. And you're not, you already know what they're going to say because you've heard this before and you're tired of their point of view and you know how stupid, wrong, and immature the whole thing is anyway. So you're not even listening. You're just waiting for an opportunity to say what you want to say because you've already been through this many times before. So instead, no matter what, no matter how strongly you feel, if you can stop yourself and say, so what you're saying is, and then really do the best job that Nathan Lewin would do in court to represent your spouse's point of view and say it as if you believe it, just to quote, to attribute it to your spouse. So what you're saying is that when I come late night after night and I don't call and I keep on promising you that I will, it makes you not be able to trust me. Is that what you're saying? It's just a shocking thing. What happens to the other person? Yeah! And then they give up because there's nothing else to say if you do it well. You're not doing it as a way of shutting them up. You're doing it as a way of actually recreating them. You're actually going to do a better job than them in saying their point of view. You're not agreeing. So what you're saying is that you don't trust me. Yeah! And you don't trust me because it's like, yeah. Okay, I see what you're saying. I don't agree, but we don't take that. Don't get to that part. I'm just saying, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. I heard what you're saying. That sentence alone will give your spouse the feeling that he/she was heard, the feeling that he/she is accepted, the feeling that he/she is intelligent, the feeling that, or most significantly, that he/she has a right to exist with that perspective. And that leads to what I would suggest is really ultimately intimacy. The reason a disagreement is a useful tool in creating intimacy is because it gives you an opportunity to climb into the world of the other and actually see the world through his, her eyes. Right? This is exactly what we try to do with God. This is how we try to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We try to see the world through God's eyes, right? What does God want for the world? Not what I want for the world. That's how we have a relationship with Hashem. Imagine having a relationship with the creator of the universe by saying, here's what I want, God, right? It can't be, it doesn't work that way. It's always, you're the creator, you have a purpose, I want to know what it is, I will please help me fulfill that. What you want for me, not what I want for you, right? So that's the same thing with a spouse. I don't want to always do what you want, but I want to know what you want. And I want you to know that I want to know what you want. Now that I know what you want, it's important to me, and now let me tell you what I want, right? Or let me tell you what I think about that. But first, getting into the world of the other is itself an act of intimacy. Yes, Alex?
To just summarize, so a way to have a constructive and unconstructive argument is to emphasize by really trying to understand your partner's point of view. One of the tricks to do that, quote unquote, is to say, so what you're saying is,
yes.
So what are some of the other tools to do that, to really get into your spouse's point of view?
Well, another tool would be, it starts with that, and then after that it's just a refinement. So what you're saying is, and then when they say, yeah, you say, is there anything else that I missed? Or that I wanted to, you know, and this is very careful, because when you're in the heat of an argument, you don't want to repeat their point of view sarcastically. Right? You want to avoid sight. So what you're saying is that if I would stop buying a newspaper every day, we would have savings and we would be able to buy a new house. Is that what you're saying? Right? Okay. That's not recreating your spouse. So what you're saying is that by me buying a newspaper, even though we agreed that I'm not going to buy the paper anymore, it just means to you that I'm not responsible and you don't know if you can trust me on other things either. Is that what you're saying? See, that's like you're really saying it from their point of view. I don't have anything else. I only have a refinement of that, which is they say, yeah, or they say, yeah,
but you feel like you didn't really get it, so you say, but I don't think I'm getting it fully. Because you don't sound like
a... What happens after that, right? You know what happens to the partner, right?
She right.
resigns because you just acknowledge and...
Right.
And then what do you do with that?
Right. So then you say, can I just tell you what I think about that? I just want to tell you what I think about that. See, immediately what you've done is you've saved yourself. Forget about him or her. What you've done now is you've taken yourself out of an argument which is designed to win. The whole idea of any argument, whatever we say about all this stuff, the goal of an argument is to win. The goal of an argument is not to relate. And it's certainly not to be a partner. It's you're in my way, your will is in my way, your ideas in my way. The moment you start repeating in a way of authentically recreating the other person, you've taken yourself out of this. You're now no longer interested in this. You're interested in just getting the other perspective. Now you're playing a different game altogether. Now you're in a totally different conversation because you've caught yourself from trying to win. If somebody it has to win, somebody has to lose, and somebody has to, in that conversation, I have to kill you. In that conversation. That's what winning is. Winning means, in this limited way, I have to kill you. That's really what winning is. So I am now going to give you life the way you are, with your perspective, by recreating you, right? So that's the whole idea here. And the idea then is that at that moment, see, here's what happens. This is very, very, this is a critical point. I have now given you the right to exist how you are, different than me. By recreating you, I've just said that I can live with that. The moment as soon as I'm in an argument in which I can't recreate you, it's because I can't stand what you're saying. I can't tolerate it. I can't be with it. I can't allow it to be. It is anathema to me. So at that moment, it's not that we're having an argument that's causing the distance. What's causing the distance is, in regards to what we're dealing with now, I can't stand you in this limited way. I can't be with you. That's the ultimate breakdown, because the thing that we're arguing about is between us. There's no intimacy when there's anything between. Intimacy is the absence of anything between the two. What's between us is that which we disagree with, because your position, your attitude, your behavior, you're not picking up the socks, is for me something I can't stand. I'm trivializing it here. Sometimes it's something much more basic than that. Your being a slob in the bedroom means to me that you don't love me, you don't care about me, and I can't tolerate that, right? Or, so what you're saying is that you feel that you're neat most of the time, and once in a while you forget, and you're sorry about it, and you don't really mean it as a thing against me. That's what you're saying? Now, the moment that you say that, you're no longer saying, I can't stand it, because you just gave the other person the ability to live that way just by recreating him at the moment. That's really a gift. And so, at the end I have here, I give my spouse the gift, I understand you have a problem with this and I want to deal with it. I give my spouse the gift of existing while he, she, and whatever it is. In other words, that's the whole point of recreation. So you see the stage here. The best way I can give that to my spouse is, and I want you to struggle with that, my spouse's point of view is in our consistent argument is, now all of a sudden you're getting out of your point of view, you're getting into the world of the other, you're discovering the other's existence, and you're actually allowing that existence to be, because you're actually putting it in words yourself. And so you give your spouse the gift of I will allow you to exist while you're messy. I will allow you to exist while you discipline the children differently than I think they should be disciplined. I will allow you to exist while you're not as religious as I am, or while you're too religious for me. The way you are is okay. You can have that. That's a gift. The ultimate gift is, that's what acceptance is. Acceptance is, I give you the gift that I am allowing you to exist the way you are. I'm not saying you have to change for me to be able to be with you. So I could make a request. It would really be nice if you would change that. Could you do that for me? That's different than you're wrong, and you're evil, and you're disgusting, implied, and you're stupid too, because you should obviously see it my way. All that's implied. Sometimes we actually say those things. So the point is, there's an act of giving over here. And the act of giving is what? The giving of their existence. How do you give them their existence? by recreating them the way they are, by literally describing their view, and all of a sudden you're in their world. So that would, you're still disagreeing. He thinks one thing, you think another thing. She thinks one thing, you think another thing. And now you say, well, here's my point of view. One more thing I want to put in over here, which is that in the four things that we mentioned in the title of this thing, children, money, time, intimacy, and those four things, which are very often the most common things that couples argue about, what we want to do is trade views and perspectives when it's not relevant. The problem with arguments is that the arguments always come up when they are relevant. And there's no opportunity there to really be clear. There's no opportunity to take into consideration the other person's point of view. Because now, it's got to be decided now. Like the, I don't know if you, how many of you heard the introduction that I gave today, but your spouse shows up after 20 minutes on the other side of Target while you're doing shopping on this side of Target. Your spouse shows up with a cart full of things bought on special. My nightmare is always shampoo and conditioner. A cart full of it when you thought they were only getting three items and they're busting your budget and your spouse is thrilled because it's all on special and they know they're going to need it in the next 15 years and they're saving a lot of money by buying it now. Plus they know their daughter's sister-in-law's roommate needs it in Israel. So whatever it is. And so they bought a lot now and you can't believe it. So at that moment, you don't see a cart full. What you see is a budget buster. What you see is somebody who is irresponsible. What you see is somebody who really should really, regarding shopping, you should not be my spouse. You really shouldn't. Somebody else should be my spouse, not you. You have no right to exist in this limited way. And that, but we argue about it as if it's life and death, right? So the point is, at that moment, we don't want to say it's okay. We don't want to say, no, it's fine. Buy what you want. Forget the budget. We have unlimited funds. No, we're not saying that. It's okay for you to be wrong. It's okay for you to have the perspective you have. I just want to share with you. Now, that moment is not the most effective time of trading perspectives. What would be effective would be, can we have a meeting to discuss our budget? Can we have a meeting to discuss what you think we ought to be doing? And I will share what I think we ought to be doing, so forth. When it comes to intimacy, same thing. People make a mistake when it comes to intimacy. Intimacy is designed to be discussed. It is not supposed to just happen without a discussion. It can be, should be discussed. When? When you're not being intimate. Okay? That's the best time to discuss intimacy. What you like, what you hate, what you want, what you need, but all the things, all the criteria, all the standards and all the things, that should be discussed, what it means to you, what it doesn't mean to you, the whole thing, the implications, all that discussion should happen, definitely should happen. Couples think that in order to go out and relate to each other, they have to go to a movie or a play or something at all. That's because too often we think of spending time with each other as doing something together that we don't have to deal with each other on. That's not what we want. When we go out, we want to actually go out and deal with each other. But we want to create a context of sharing perspectives. So it could be disagreements. But it's if you can go out and sit on a bench or sit in a lobby or sit in the car or sit in your living room and not go out and say, so what you're saying is, right, that will make a tremendous difference in the quality of the conversation. It sounds so easy and it sounds so corny, and I'm telling you it is one of the hardest things to do because we are so conditioned to make sure that we are heard and we are so sure that we're not being heard that we can't even afford to let the other person be heard because we're sure we're not going to be heard. So even mean spouses are really just children who are afraid they're not being listened to. That's really what it is. Even mean spouses, I'm not talking about violent, I'm not talking about abuse. Every time I say anything compassionate about a bad husband or a bad wife, people say I'm condoning violence. No. Violence, emotional abuse, the goal of which is to destroy the other person, got to be dealt with, and it can't be dealt with by any seminar by Rabbi Feldman and Beth Jacob. No. Needs a specialist. I'm talking about the typical meanness that happens very often in spouses. Even mean spouses are little children who are convinced that they'll never be listened to. And the biggest gift you can give them is listening. So what you're saying is.
And I see your point of view. From if I thought that way, if I felt that way, I would also feel insulted. And I see it. Now let me tell you how I thought. But it's not sarcastic, and it's not in order to get through that so you can get your point. It's actually recreating. So that's the point I want to make. It's now more than 9:07. And Avraham, you had a comment. Let's just make it like this. Let's call this over so people can leave if they want to. It's not inappropriate or impolite to get up and leave if you have to. And now we'll continue.
So the next seminar we're going to give is going to be a conflict resolution, which is after I have validated my wife in this case, right?
What do you do then?
Now how am I going to do what I want to do?
Okay, that would be a good idea. I hear the suggestion.
You have it, you know, have to tell the child, I want my children to be home. I want my son to be home at 11:30. She wants the kids to keep stay up till 12 o'clock. So now we both appreciate that we both have views that are relevant. And how do we make a decision?
Very good. Very good. Okay.
I have to put you on the spot before you have that fellow's lecture. Yes. I would love to have a lecture on how exactly we can condition ourselves to say so what we're saying is. Right, because that's the trick, right? Because on the outside it's your ego, which says, I need relief from tension, I need to change this spouse's behavior, I need
right.
to communicate like my frustrations. Why should that be, you know, way less than the so what you're saying is, right? And so your ego is pushing those points, and then they're good reasons, right? And so what are some of the tools?
Okay, so I'll give you one tool right now. I'll give you one tool right now. This is like, you know, this is like a bonus, okay? One tool, meaning it's not part of the thing itself. But one tool is that when you say, when you and your wife say, let's sit down and have a discussion about something, or remember that argument we had yesterday? Let's sit down and really just talk about it. Let's have a disagreement, not an argument, right? So at that point, you bring a postcard with you, and it says, so what you're saying is, okay? Okay, it really could be fun. It really could be fun. So let's see who can recreate the other most effectively, right? And you put it down on the table between you or on your wife's lap or whatever it is, and you say, you get to flash this three times during this conversation, right? That would be one thing. So what you're saying is. Maybe we ought to, you know, this is the kind of thing, if my wife was giving this talk, she'd already have a multicolored laminated card to pass out that, with abbreviations in Hebrew and English that would say, so what you're saying is. Okay, what is that? What's that? Exactly. Okay, but this is not hers, this is mine, so I'm just telling you, okay? Okay. Okay, she's going to do it. I'm just saying, that is, but again, it's not the technique as much as it is the act of giving. I just want to emphasize that this, so what you're saying is literally an act of chiyas hamesim. Who's dead? The person in your eyes is dead. You were just trying to kill them through an argument. You're wrong. Your position is wrong. You're evil. You're worthless. That's behind all the nice, civilized way that we argue. That's what we're saying. And what we're doing is chiyas hamesim. I am now going to resuscitate you into life by giving your position the light of day and saying to you that I can be with you while you think that. And okay, now I want to tell you what I think. I hope you can be with me while I think. Yes?
The problem is that if the next moment you say, I'll tell you what I think,
yeah,
you know, we're back to square one.
No, we're not.
You've
got to
let time go by. You've got to live in that.
You don't have to agree with the other person. You don't, and you don't have to. It does that. You have to authentically convince the other person that you heard their point of view. As soon as you do that, you can then have your point of view because the other person now feels heard. Now they can deal with it. All they've been doing the whole time is making sure that you hear them. One of us has got to hear the other first. As soon as hearing happens, the person can back down. And people do not mind having their way not prevail, as long as they were really heard. It's an amazing thing. As long as they were heard. Yeah.
So where does change in behavior come in? Because I don't really see how that plays into being heard. If that was really the reason for the argument, then yes, fine. That works out nicely. But if you're really looking for change in behavior, just the fact that you were heard, and then you hear the other person out, there's no resolution. Are you
going to
change?
Well, so now there's a room for. See, the thing is, by recreating you, I said that you have a right to exist even without changing. It's a point of view, I disagree, and now I'm making a request. I'm not insisting,
I'm not demanding, I'm not dictating. So let me tell you, I would really appreciate it if you would.
Or,
you know, according, or let me point out that we agreed already on X, Y, and Z. So now the person is able to listen to you as opposed to whatever you say, I'm going to argue because you're impossible. I can't talk to you. So it makes creative resolution possible in 2 seconds because I'm no longer trying to defend myself for my existence. I am now involved in a conversation about what will work and what won't work. We still might disagree, but it's no longer you're no good, you're wrong, you're bad. It's, you have that perspective, I have this perspective, which way is going to work out? So I don't want to oversimplify. You know, sometimes people have years and years of history, and it's hard for them to climb down off of their defensive posture and so on and so forth. It's very hard. But this is the way for a couple to break the cycle of destructive argument, you know. So good. I think we're going to need more work here because I see there's a lot of questions. You know, if I've stirred things up, that's good. You know, because we want to know that there's another path. You know. Yes.
What you're saying then?
Very good.
The person, you can accept the person the way they are, and even if you hear them and they hear you, nothing may still change. Like, you've given them life the way they are, but it doesn't mean that you will get your way. No.
It does not mean you'll get your way. Not only that, you might actually be willing to not get your way,
right?
Because this is no longer a slugfest. This is two people with two perspectives, and you know, whatever it is. You know, and the other person may have something to contribute, which you haven't been able to hear. Yeah. So it's by the way, it works this way in studying Torah also, by the way. When we get in an argument with a chavrusa, most of the time we're not listening to the chavrusa at all. And there's nothing wrong with arguing. We should be arguing. But we should be arguing by repeating the position of the other person first. The Gemara actually talks about this in terms of models for real respect for the others, that, you know, one position would actually repeat the position of the other first. And what they're saying is, I'm not having my position to make your position wrong and to make you worthless. I'm having my position, I'm actually getting my position out of your position. And it's the same thing here. That's who we are, really chavrusas in life. It's really the same thing. All right.